are listening to Rift Overcast.
It's our game. Not the one we made, it's the one we play.
The team here plays the game a lot.
We really think differently about MMOs than what a lot of people do.
Our game isn't the game it was a year ago.
This game changes all the time. Since launch, we've been non-stop planning on what to do next.
It's all about listening to the players.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Rift Overcast. My name is Matt, and with me, as always, is Joe.
Hey.
Things have heated up in Rift quite a bit this week in regards to a survey that went out, as well as a rogue movement requesting changes to energy regen. But first, let's go over the announcements. The poll from last week, how do you feel about seeing the same characters recycled as bosses, stemmed out of our conversations about Primeval Feast, which is suspected to be the new 10-man that's going to follow Infernal Dawn. The poll options were, I like seeing my favorites again, I don't mind, as long as it fits the story, and I hate seeing things recycled. We got 2 votes for I don't mind, 4 for I hate seeing things recycled, and 11 said as long as it fits the story, they're okay with seeing the characters recycled as bosses. Which, I agree, I think as long as it fits the story, then, you know what, that's fine. And like we said last week too, Joe, I think you were saying as long as the fights are, you know, intuitive and unique then and challenging, then so be it.
Yeah, verbatim, I said as long as the fights are intriguing, I don't care if they look like David Bowie.
Real quick, we mentioned this last week, I'd like to mention it again, Overcast is on Twitch TV. We're still in the beta stages, basically, as we build content and bring in some new hosts. So we have no schedule yet, but we will have one in the future. We'll be streaming at random times as we work on optimizing the stream to the best possible quality and frame rate. We're fairly familiar with the software, still kind of working the kinks out, still kind of trying to find that sweet spot where it looks good to you and it runs well for you, and we're not struggling with frame rates in-game either, which, Joe, you don't really have much of an issue with it, but yeah, I need some upgrades. We are looking for some new voices to stream specific areas of Rift to the Twitch TV channel, areas such as progression rating and PvP once a week. If you're interested in becoming a streamer for Overcast, simply send us an email at riftovercast@gmail.com with your preferred schedule, what you want to stream, your system specifications, and the speed of your connection. We'll post an announcement on Twitter, Facebook, and on the official forums, as well as the blog when we do have a schedule and as new things develop for the Twitch channel. So speaking of streaming, Rift's streaming client is now live. The new client will allow you to begin playing the game after a new patch is out without having to wait for the patch to finish downloading. If you're playing while the client is downloading the latest patch, you'll notice a download icon on your in-game UI that will show you the download progress. Be aware that connections slower than 5 Mbps may have issues playing while downloading. That's pretty much any connection that's not at least DSL. It's pretty much you need to have high-speed internet. I don't think too many people should really have an issue with the download speeds.
I will. I have dial-up.
You have dial-up, Joe? Are you still on AOL?
No, MSN.
I wonder if anybody even uses those anymore. Does anybody even use AOL anymore? People still use it for chat, I guess.
I'm pretty sure AOL's prices went down pretty significantly because everybody's, you know, no one actually uses it for internet. So it's probably like a much cheaper plan now just for chat.
Dude, I remember, just real quick, I remember back in the Diablo 2 days, I used to cycle between my free time on Net Zero and my free time on Blue Light, which was like a Kmart ISP.
I remember Net Zero. I do not remember Blue Light.
I think there was another one, too, that had, like 10 hours of free internet time per month, and I would just, like, cycle between, like, 3 of them, get, like, 30 hours of internet time for free.
That's sad. I had dial-up for, because you have to realize, like, since I'm younger than you, I got dial-up probably right when cable was coming out, DSL, so I probably only had dial-up for, like, 2-3 years tops.
Well, yeah, and you started your dial-up with a 56K probably, too. I think you were telling me that.
I don't think anything lesser than that was even, like, you know, plausible by the time I started playing on the computer.
Yeah, maybe I'm just a lot older than I feel, but I remember playing DOS games on a 14.4 connection, 14.4 modem.
Damn, that shit's pretty high-tech.
If you are having issues playing the game while the client is streaming the download, Tran recommends pretty simply, I think it's kind of common sense, that you exit the game and wait for the download to complete. Also, you may have noticed that your first time logging in since the stream client went live, required you to download a relatively sizable patch. I think it was it like 9 or 10 gigs?
9.95 gigabytes to be exact. Yeah.
That may have taken a little bit longer than you have expected to complete it. Tryon assures us that this is simply because you were downloading the streaming client itself, and download speeds, pending your connection speed, of course, should download at a speed consistent with what you're used to in the future. War of the Wanton Maw. The event has been extended out 1 week, and Tryon confirms that the Epic Quest Chain is definitely here to stay. Tryon says this quest chain may disappear for a short time after the event ends, but it will return shortly afterwards and will become a permanent quest chain. Which, this is awesome, because Joe, you and me have been struggling to, because we discovered this whole thing, like, and the rewards for it, the good weapons and the gloves and everything, from this kind of late, so we got a late start on it, so this is awesome. And this means we'll be able to get this on our alts, so.
Yeah, mainly because the one quest we were doing, which I actually can't remember the name of, but basically, you know, involved getting certain items from certain fire and earthen zone events, rather, which is all across the forums. And no offense, Giant, is extremely poorly designed. But I will say that from what I've read and what we've done, you know, with the exception of that one quest, the rest of the chain is actually pretty enjoyable. And it's actually pretty cool to, like, actually have, like, a reason to go out in the world.
Yeah, I really enjoy the Epic Quest chains. I don't know how much design time goes into these, but I really kind of want to see more of them. Possibly with rewards that are either neutral, so things such as just really epic looking costume pieces or things like that, or maybe some planar essence, you know, something that's not really gonna get dated as quickly as something like a relic weapon does.
Yeah, that's definitely concerning. I mean, you know, we're still completely unsure what the final result is of this, but from what we have seen, it's probably like a tier one epic weapon. Which is kind of a little bit of a letdown, but at the very least, we can get, we both are probably using gloves that we got for the look, so, because I'm not sure if yours, but my gloves were definitely a new model I've never seen.
Yeah, I did see that. I tried them on when you linked them to me when we were trying to decide what which ones you were going to use, which is really interesting that there's a new model there. It's probably going to get recycled in some future raid tier.
Sure hope that.
Tryon has made some performance updates, specifically. One creative forum user referred to them as green condoms. NPCs that are waiting to spawn due to a high amount of player models on the screen at once will now appear as a giant green condom, essentially. But this allows you to interact with the NPC without having to wait for it to spawn, because there'll be like a tall green like dome of energy. Kind of funny that that the game can render this wall of green energy or whatever, but it can't render the NPC.
Yeah, I think that is kind of ironic, but I guess, you know, there's no textures to it. It's, like, you know, extremely easy to render, so.
That's definitely true. So these will show up for any of the NPCs that are waiting to spawn due to the high player population in the area, and this is probably the most notable situation that you'll see this will occur in is during or immediately after a zone event. Everybody's waiting for the Particulate Master to spawn, and he's not showing up, but now there'll be a big green dome there. You can click on that and use the Particulate, no problem.
Yeah, and he has a con mod, so it's safe.
We got some fan mail.
That's what I'm here for comedy.
Yeah, of course. We got some fan mail this week. This is actually for you, Joe. Devin is currently a level 25 playing a Ranger spec, and he asks, "This question is primarily for Joe, since he talked about liking the Ranger soul in episode 10. I was wondering what you think about it as a playstyle, ranged with a tank pet, when you reach 50 and start working on dailies on the Ember Isle. Because I play during the early morning hours, I am on my own a lot, and I am wondering if a hunter-ish spec will work at the level cap, or if the tank pet loses its utility at level 50. Thanks for the great show."
Luckily for myself, and me and Matt had discussed this off air, was the changes in 1.8 making Ranger viable. And I think I discussed this somewhat of an extent in episode 10, was that, you know, when Ranger became viable, that definitely piqued my interest, because while I liked Marksman, I didn't love it. And the best thing about it is that it's a 51-point spec Ranger, which means that my pet, you know, couldn't be any better, basically. So the tank pet definitely does not lose any utility at 50, especially now with the 1.8 change. It was still somewhat viable. You never used that spec in a raid or whatnot, but the good thing now is my spec for soloing is identical to what I would use in a raid. So I don't have to waste an extra, you know, a roll slot, basically. And I will say that the boar, you know, the tank bat, has an AoE taunt, and I have to admit, it's absolutely terrible. Though, the Misdirect Divert Rage compensates for that a lot, especially if you do that in, like, Rain of Arrows, and it only has a minute cooldown, so unless you're just constantly doing AoE pulls, you know, the tank put is, tank pet, lol, has the best utility possible, especially on Embrile, because the mobs there are ridiculous when you first go there, especially as a fresh 50. I actually remember going there with, like, mostly blues, and couldn't imagine how long it was going to take to kill one of the mobs, but obviously as your gear increases, that will become easier and easier.
How's the boar survivability holding up on the Isle for you?
I mean, for me, because not that neither one of us is, you know, very well geared. We basically are, both of us are on, I am at the absolute minimum requirements for tier 2 rating. Matt's a little bit beyond me. But for a fresh 50, as long as you have your heal rolling, and unless you aggro like 3 or more mobs, you should be absolutely fine. And I say 3 or more mobs because Embrial mobs are, I would say, since they're all 52 as well as a 50, are probably double the HP of a 50 in like Stillmore or Shimmer Sand, etc. When you get to my point, it's not so much that the Peckett's any stronger, it's just that, you know, you'll be doing so much more damage, you know, the mobs are just, you know, dead so much faster. So, it's not a great thing, the instant unit 50, simply because, you know, the amount of damage you do, it might be a little time-consuming to kill the thing, but, you know, your pet should stay alive, and as you get gear, it just will become easier and easier.
Yeah, I suspect that the Ranger is probably fairly good for questing on the Ember Isle, although, how has it held up for you? Soloing rifts, or have you tried to solo any rifts yet, especially like major ones?
With major ones, I'm definitely not doing a major Umbral event or rift because those things just absolutely crush me no matter what spec I'm. If I'm doing a major though in Stillmore or something, it's fine. I mean, because the majority of the major rifts I can pull 1 to 2, maybe even 3 mobs at a time, and I do enough damage that, you know, it's fine. It might be pretty rough for a fresh 50, but regular rifts, mono rifts, are completely cake, quite frankly, so he shouldn't have any issue with those, even on Umbral as a fresh 50.
So let's move on to the discussion a bit, because there's a, I was going to put this in the announcements, but there's actually quite a bit to talk about regarding this. There was a survey that went out. The post from Zan says, over the next week, some of you will be receiving an email from Trial and Worlds asking you to participate in a short survey that will help us get to know you better and help us understand how we can serve you better as Rift continues to evolve. He said a bit more. I'm just going to skip over the rest of the post. But this actually upset many players, mostly because they feel that this will prevent Tryon from acquiring quality feedback from active players as opposed to new players in inactive or trial accounts, though we can't confirm that the survey can actually select from accounts that are not currently paying a subscription. We don't actually really know how the survey is, or how they're selecting people. They simply said that to ensure that we would get the best possible sample, we're going to be sending the survey to a randomly selected group of accounts. So not everyone will receive one, but we did want to give you the heads up that we are sending out some surveys, and they are legit.
I don't think the surveys are as random as they say, quite frankly. Because, first, for one, I doubt they're sending anyone who's inactive. And I doubt they're sending to someone who plays an hour a day, just to be, like, honest. Because I have more faith in Tryon than that, quite frankly.
I don't think they have a way. I don't think that they're really going to tell. Like, I don't know. It's weird because his statement says, we're going to be sending the survey to a randomly, I'll keep that in mind, selected group. So, okay. Kind of seems like we got a little contradiction here. How can something, you know, a randomly selected group. It sounds more like that they chose a certain grouping of players.
Yeah,
and then sent out like a group of like maybe 500 players and then sent out like 200 surveys kind of thing.
No, what I think is they kind of, you know, toned down, you know, obviously it's not like every player, like I said, it's like 500, hell, it could be even as much as like 10,000 players. But obviously that initial pool of players that they're picking from has already, you know, passed, you know, certain requirements that they want, whether it's like time played on a weekly basis, possibly even raid progression, whatever the case may be, and then they essentially are pulling it out of a hat, you know, a certain amount of names out of that original pool of players.
Well, I'll say this, players who haven't been selected for the survey, and we're not sure how long the survey is running for, but I believe it's still running, I think they're still sending them out, unless they just sent them out all in one big bulk, but if you didn't get a chance to participate in the survey, Keep in mind that there is an in-game feedback option available by clicking the question mark icon in your menu tray. And this method of feedback, it's not going to directly contribute to the focus survey that's currently going on, but you can still give your feedback on the same issues that the survey is focusing on, which is Warfronts, open world, gear progression, class balance, guild matches, and arena, which kind of brings us to our next topic. And the reason why I put this in the discussion and not in the announcements, these different areas that they're surveying on, open world, gear progression, class balance don't specify, but considering that there is Warfronts, guild matches, and arena on this list, I'm taking it as like all of these are PvP oriented. Like open world is open world PvP. PvP gear progression and PvP class balance. That's what I'm taking it as.
I agree with all of those except for open world. I definitely think open world PvP is encompassed in this, but I do also think it's talking about a very general topic in terms of like we were just talking about with the world event and being able to go out in the world and experience it. I think it's a pretty generalized thing when it comes to that. They're not only asking for PvP, they're asking for anything that makes you get up and go do stuff around the world. They're basically asking, like, you know, are you satisfied with that? And if not, you know, should they develop more of it?
Well, if open world isn't specifically open world PvP and gear progression isn't specifically PvP gear progression, I certainly hope that those are included, because those are two of the biggest complaints about PvP. Obviously, there's a lot of big complaints about the PvP right now, but those are two very popular topics.
I think that it's really smart on trying to finally, you know, be doing, whether it's surveys or any type of feedback of PvP, because as much as rating is a big part of this game, I think there is another huge population in this game that plays strictly for PvP, and we both know that there's like numerous problems with it, and not even PvP often. I just see it because numerous threads in the forums, people talking in 50 chat, general chat, well, you name it, it's all over the place that PvP needs, you know, new features, and it needs fixes of the current or available features.
Well, you know, you couple the subjects that are being surveyed on this random survey with the fact that Tryon has told us that patch 1.9 is going to be PvP oriented, and I'm thinking that that's what this survey is for. It's you put that all together, and I'm seeing, you know, guild matches and arena and some new Warfront stuff, possibly rated Warfronts, in maybe as early as 1.9.
I think everyone expects at least something in 1.9. I don't think anyone's going into this thinking that, you know, there'll be a complete overhaul of anything in 1.9, but they expect, you know, small increments at the very least in 1.9. So I don't think that's, you know, anything surprising, really.
The most curious of these subjects that they're asking about specifically is guild matches and arenas. So let's talk about the guild matches first, because there's a word there that immediately sparks your thoughts about a certain other game coming out, which is Guild Wars 2. And what is the big thing about Guild Wars 2? I mean, it's even on the Rift forums that a lot of the people who are enjoying the PvP in Rift, or who want to enjoy and want to see the PvP in Rift improve, are currently kind of eyeballing Guild Wars 2 as their possible go-to game for PvP.
Yeah, and Guild Wars, obviously in the name, kind of encompasses guild matches. Whether it's in the battleground type system they have, which I wouldn't really call it more, it's more of an arena, I should say. And even Warriors World, even in the short beta weekend, people have been talking about how it encompasses a lot of guild versus guild, because guilds, not necessarily as a whole, but a big chunk of their players will go out and defend their specific base or whatever it may be. So it definitely still has the feeling of big guild battles. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I really don't. I think it's, you know, they're kind of putting feelers out, seeing if that has any traction. If so, they might start development on it. I think that arenas, though, are completely inevitable, because people have been asking for one for a very long time. And I kind of feel like, with the exception of, like, adding more battlegrounds, what else are they really going to do, you know, to that? They're going to have to add another whole new feature, not just add on to previous features. And arenas are kind of like, you know, the most realistic and, like, easy to think of solution to that.
Well, the big thing with guild matches, arenas, rated Warfronts is adding additional character progression in PvP to the game. Because, like you said, adding other Warfronts, sure, it can be fun to do a different mode if they can come up with a fun and unique mode to do. But simply adding another place to do the current fighting that you're already doing on the same scale your character isn't going to progress at all. It's still going to have all the same issues, just on a different map. So really, it's going to have to be, you know, it's going to have to be like rated war fronts, and it's going to have to be guild matches and arenas. So you think that the guild matches is a direct response to the upcoming release of Guild Wars 2 then?
Oh, definitely. I don't think it's a coincidence whatsoever. I think that they know that a lot of people are looking at that game, and that's smart, because I talked in episode 10 that no matter what game you are now, if you're already out and you know are at least somewhat popular, you have to be looking at what these new games are offering. And you know, even Trian has said in the past, they have said they play other games. So, you know, they're not going to figure out every intricate little detail and nuances of any game that comes out, Guild Wars or anything else. But they got to know, like, the big features that are luring someone to that game. And this is World versus World versus World, I should say, is something that no game is offering currently. And that, coupled with the extreme dissatisfaction in the last, you know, few months, I would say, with PvP and Rift, that's a huge concern if I'm Trion. So I have to fix that, like, ASAP. Because, you know, Guild Wars isn't coming out tomorrow. It's probably at least, you know, 3-4 months away. So you have lots of development time to rectify this and, you know, hope to salvage it. So I definitely think this is a thing to send out feelers. If you get good response, you know, feedback that you expect, which you want it, basically, you get right on top of developing it.
I agree. And I hope that we're right about this. I hope that all the different subjects that we're seeing in this survey that are specifically PvP, like the war fronts, the guild matches, and the arenas, is really a sign that, I'm sorry, I don't think that people that get the survey, if they, you know, targeted the right group, I don't think they're going to get a very negative result, aside from maybe their current satisfaction, because there's two things. There's how much importance do you place on each subject in the survey, and then there's how satisfied are you with each subject in the survey. Now, obviously, you can't be very satisfied with Arena, but you could be extremely dissatisfied that they're not there. I think enough people are going to vote for guild matches and war fronts and Arena as being very important to them, that they're going to come out and we're going to see some of this. So I hope that we're right about this stuff, because I would love to see, obviously, like, we had a whole episode dedicated to PvP with Mythblaze, and this was all stuff that we talked about during that. Was it episode 7, I think?
Actually, I think it was 8.
We don't even know our own episodes. We can't even keep track. We're 11 episodes.
We're that good, guys. We're that good.
Okay. We're that good. Well, you know, there's another huge draw to Guild Wars 2 right now, okay? And I don't. This is definitely about Rift, okay? So bear with me. But the whole world versus world versus world thing, the whole, you know, realm versus realm, the RVR and the open world, you know, massive sieging and all that stuff going on. We talked a little bit about the concepts of sieging and such in Rift, and I think Rift would be, you know, a great plane to get that in, and I wonder if that's why open world is on the survey. I wonder if that's encompassed in that, is maybe they're considering some kind of lake feature.
I was actually surprised they didn't specifically either write lake or, like, next to open world, they said, like, in parentheses, like, PvP lake, because I think if I were to pick something people want, like, ASAP, I think that actually would be, you know, I think people would be satisfied if arenas and guild matches were, like, in development and were, you know, trying to definitively came out and said, you know, they're coming. But I think if they were to launch a lake, like, say, in 1.9 or something, they would keep a lot of people satisfied. That coupled with what I just said, you know, saying the other stuff was in development and will be coming. Like, I think that and maybe arenas, I would say, probably the two most things they need to add, like, the fastest, because I think they're both extremely desired by PvP player base in this game.
Very obviously are, and you definitely hit the nail on the head, because we ran a poll a few episodes back where we asked our listeners what features of PvP they wanted the most, and the winning vote was for open world PvP, was for some kind of lake content or fortress sieging.
Honestly, couldn't be less surprised by this, if there's even a word by that. Like, absolutely 0% surprised that they are even looking into this. It's just, even if Guild Wars wasn't coming out, I'd still think that this would be a huge thing they'd be investigating. I just think Guild Wars amplifies and magnifies the situation even more.
Well, you know, if you look at the games that are out in 2012, it's very obvious, first of all, that PvP has become a huge, before WoW Arena, but I think WoW Arena, because WoW Arena became an esport, really kind of reinvigorated the emphasis on PvP in an MMORPG. And of course, there are a lot of diehard Dark Age of Camelot fans that really enjoyed Fortress Sieging then. Lineage 2 had Fortress Sieging. And now, in 2012, we're looking at Star Wars is doing, the Old Republic is doing raided war fronts, or war zones, as they call it. That's supposed to be out, or coming out soon for them. The Secret World is a three-faction MMORPG that has a lot of sandbox elements to it, and is going to be very heavily focused on PvP and three-faction PvP, so that's going to be an RVR-style game. And then you have Guild Wars 2 that's going to have RVR in addition to having its 5v5 instance PvP. So to stay in the game, you really have to do this, and even if the PvP community in any MMORPG, no matter which one you're playing, is a minority, it's still an extremely sizable chunk where if you lose that community, I think you're going to lose a very significant bulk of your subscribers.
I think that, and I don't know, I think that whatever they do to the changes, not that they have to do them necessarily like really immediately, because like I said, there's tons of development time, but they just have to come out and announce, which is something Trion doesn't really do. They always try to keep very, you know, quiet about all their plans, but I think this is something they almost have to like break the mold. They have to straight up say, like, this is in development. Because if you don't do that, and people don't know what's coming,
well, they have done that. Because they have told us that 1.9 is going to be a PvP patch. It's going to be like the PvP patch.
But they haven't specified what's in it, though. So PvP patch could specify there's two more battlegrounds, or war fronts, rather.
That's true, but I think that the survey is a really good indicator. I hope it goes through. Man, if we saw guild matches, arenas, or more PvP, I think this would do wonders for Rift's subscription base as well, not just maintaining the people that are already there and looking for these features, but also attracting several new players that are currently eyeballing other MMOs.
I just think this is a huge reflection on, in the last couple of years, people have now want like games to focus on everything. Like, I don't know about you, but I feel like even 3 years ago, you had MMOs that were more focused on one thing. It was either your PvE game or your PvP game. And there was a couple exceptions. Some games did both, but when they did that, you know, one was always clearly what the focus was, and the other one was almost like, you know, enough to keep you satisfied, nothing spectacular. Now I feel like everyone wants an all-in-one, you know, experience, and that I think this is a huge reflection of that.
I definitely agree that that's how the genre has evolved out, but it's also a good thing. I mean, it makes perfect sense, right? Because if you find a game, if you find an MMORPG that you like, first of all, you consider the nature of the game where, you know, you're in a whole world, you know? This isn't, you're at some menu like, you know, Diablo 2 on Battle.net or the Call of Duty match menu or something, where you're at some menu and you just join games and join matches and do stuff. This is a completely open and persistent world in this genre, so it's natural that people would want it to encompass a wide variety of things, and also over the ages, the different genres within the genre, such as, you know, role-playing, PvP, epic questing stuff, things like that have all evolved. They've all acquired their own, you know, sizable followings, sizable communities, where that's what the, you know, that community plays an MMORPG for, specifically.
Yeah, I mean, there's no negatives to this. I was just saying, you know, how apparent it was, because, I mean, I hate going back, but I remember when we went to go play Ion, the one thing that, when that was coming out, and you can make fun of me and Matt all you want for playing Ion, but it still had some, it's great, it's good moments.
Ion was awesome. That was the best. Ion is the best PvP. I'm sorry. I love Rift. I like Rift PvP because I enjoy my class, and I enjoy the freedom that I have to spec for PvP and specific utilities PvP. That's excellent. That's something no other game can compare to. But regardless, Ion, I still credit with the best PvP I've ever experienced.
Before Meta went on that, you know, rant, I was going to say.
Sorry.
That, when we went to go play that game, that was one of the very first games that we had saw that was almost an all-in-one experience. Because the PvE didn't look, like, spectacular, but it looked like over time it would, you know, it would evolve. And the PvP, you know, like you just said, was already, even at launch, even to be spectacular. But that's dead and gone, quite frankly, now. So I'm just saying that when we went to go play that game, it was one of the first that tried to appeal to a, you know, all-in-one experience. And now it's a standard. Like, every game that comes out now is like, here's our PvE, here's our PvP. It's not like, this is our goal, this is what we're doing, you know, we're heavy PvE, or vice versa.
Right, and it should be a standard, because this is what I was going to say before, was that once you find that MMORPG that you really love, like, you know, for us, it's Rift. And even though I don't feel like the PvP in Rift is you know on par with my PvP experience in either Ion or whatever other MMORPG I might compare it to, Rift is still my favorite MMORPG, so it's natural, right, that I wouldn't want to have to look to another title to be able to satisfy a certain area of the game, you know, to satisfy my PvP cravings or to satisfy my raving cravings. I want to get it in the game that I love and enjoy for you know, for the reasons that I love and enjoy it, like the class system and the rifting and everything like that.
Oh, yeah.
Shouldn't have to look elsewhere.
I had even said, like, last week in the episode, like, the population of the game isn't saying, I'm going to Guild Wars buy. They're saying, listen, Guild Wars has this, or any game for that matter that's coming out that has some big PvP. Give me a reason to stay, because I like all the aspects, but PvP is extremely lacking. So give me a reason to stay, because at this point, anything will keep me stay, you know, as long as it's considerable, and, you know, you flat out say it's coming, you know. Without that, though, I will start, like, to heavily consider other alternatives.
So you're gonna PvP with me, right? When Arena comes out, we're gonna do 2v2.
You know, it's funny you say that because I actually was thinking about that like literally maybe a couple of days ago because I thought eventually they would implement some sort of arena system, and then I might at the very least consider it because I have never liked Warfronts or Battlegrounds very much. They're fun when you have like a huge group of people and you all queue together, but like I cannot tolerate it. Like when it's like myself or even one other person, it's just sometimes it's bad. I get bored of it so fast. It's not enjoyable at all. But Arena and World of Warcraft gave me a lot of enjoyment for pretty much the entirety of Burning Crusade expansion. So that was a good like year and a half that I did Arena. I didn't do it the whole time, but I definitely did it for a good maybe 6 months of that, and I had a lot of fun with it. So if it's anything like that, and you know, obviously me and you will do it together, I'll at the very least try it, and I probably will enjoy it to, you know, a considerable
good,
extent.
You better, because I don't want to have to try to, you know, slash 50 chat and looking for Rogue for 2v2 or whatever.
I'll tell you one thing, though. If there's a lake zone, I'm going to live there. Like, and if they release housing, I'm going to put my house in the lake zone so I never leave. You guys have to realize that when I forced Matt to play Tor, which is always a constant joke between us because I always say Matt forced me to play that absolutely abysmal game. Because
I told you Tor was going to be terrible. I'm like, dude, come play
Rift
again.
Long story short, okay? It wasn't so much that I was amazed by Tor's beta. I simply had far, far too much faith in BioWare. So anything that was wrong in beta would be rectified.
Yeah, you were being a fanboy.
Yeah, something you should be extremely familiar with. Anyway, I was so stoked for Ilum because Ilum is essentially what, you know, is it a lake? It was never functional ever. Like, literally, it was constantly broken because I've always liked that. Like, and that intrigues me a little about Guild Wars. I've already pre-purchased. I will at least give Guild Wars a shot, but I don't foresee me ever quitting Rift for it. Because I don't think PvE will ever hold my attention enough. Plus, it's free, technically, so after you buy the game, so...
But if Rift gives you a lake, then
exactly.
Why do you need to look anywhere
then
else?
Then I don't need anything. Then I would have wasted... I pretty much pre-purchased to play the beta. So if Rift implements the lake, then I just wasted $60. But whatever, I'm just saying that I've always enjoyed the lake of PvP more so than any other form of PvP. And the sad part is that it's been actually quite rare in games. So when Tor announced it, that really intrigued me because with it, I guess a bit the Abyss in Ion was a lake, but that was poorly executed, to be honest. It had its strong points, but it had like a lot of bad things about it. And trying to think, can you even think of another lake, you know, unless you go all the way back to Dark Age of Camelot, like, you know, in the last 5 years, because I can't. Like, it's a really rare thing, which is funny because apparently it's an untapped market because Guild Wars is like, here's a massive lake and people are just, you know, flocking to it. So,
well, it's all about the amount of players that's in the game, you know what I mean? And the lake just, it takes advantage of the amount of people that are in the world all at the same time and can just create these massive battles, you know, where it's just like Braveheart type stuff, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And that's
always
just
my appeal to it. I've always wanted more, you know, grand scale. I liked how it's static. I can't stand the concept of rounds in Warfronts or Battlegrounds. I like how it's like constantly going and it's relentless.
Well, I want to move us on a little bit here, but real quick before we do move on to our next topic today. Maybe you could give our listeners a little bit of background, because I'm not sure that everybody's... We keep referring to this feature as a lake. I'm not sure everybody's really familiar with exactly what a lake is.
To put it simply, if you ever played World of Warcraft, imagine, like, Wintergrasp, or... What was the one in Cataclysm? Tol Barad, right? Imagine that, but like normally bigger in scale. I would say honestly, probably two or three times those in size. But you know, that varies based on the game. But then it's static and there's no rounds to it. You're still capturing points, you're still gathering points for your team and whatnot, but it's constantly going. So it's never like, oh, an hour the round ends, or 20 minutes, right? It's like always completely static. That's really the only way I explain it. If you've played Ion, the Abyss was similar to that. Well, it actually was a lake technically. Ilum in Star Wars: The Old Republic was a lake. Dark Age of Camelot had RVR. I think even Warhammer actually had one.
Yeah, lakes are typically encompass fortress ownership. There are key points laid out across a normally extremely large map, or in some games, the entire world, where there are these key points that you have to fight for ownership of, which could involve, you know, building catapults, building batarangs, and things to knock down the gates and DPS the gate down. You break the gate, you get into the castle, capture a certain orb or something that will give you ownership of that castle or that building or key location. And these are going on all the time. So a true lake, if I have this correct, then a true lake isn't scheduled either. Like Wintergrasp in World of Warcraft was similar to a Warfront, where it would go live at a certain time. Like you'd go there at any point in time that you wanted, but you couldn't capture any of the objectives unless there was currently a match underway. But a true lake is completely persistent. So if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you have 100 guild members on, and the guild that currently owns the castle or whatever that's in the lake zone isn't online, has like three people on, you can totally take advantage of it and just go steal it from them while they sleep.
Oh, and I must clarify the difference also between, I believe Warhammer had it, and so did Dark Age of Camelot, now Guild Wars 2, is not only is it there a lake there, but they have RVR, which is essentially means it's realm versus realm. So literally, people from different servers are attacking you. Whereas Star Wars: The Old Republic, Ilum was, you know, all inter-realm. There was no people from outside your server attacking you. And the biggest thing about Guild Wars is that it's not just RVR. It's technically RVRVR because there's three teams in their zone. There isn't two like most games before it.
So one of the other options in this survey was class balance, which kind of rolls us into our next discussion topic. Because speaking of class balance, let's look at balancing the rogue energy. Because there was, like I said, there was a huge movement by the rogues on the forums, at least, looking for changes to energy. And it's been known for a while that rogue energy has been relatively difficult to manage and extremely reliant on elder tablets and on a fervor or living energy buff from either the bard or the chloromancer. Daglar responded to the movement and said that rogue energy will be increased to 24 energy per second, up from 23, but the energy regen component of the Rift Reward consumable, the Elder Tablet, will be removed. So this change, a lot of rogues are very happy with it because this change does remove their dependency on the Elder Tablet, which I think Elder Tablets were going for as high as like a plat each. And didn't you find a post? Somebody was saying that they were going through like 60 plus Elder Tablets in a raid night? Or is it even more than that?
Yeah, I would say that was about approximately one. It was more than a plat. Like a kid actually screenshotted his server, and they were generally around a plat and a half each. So there was like a stack on there for like 65 plat or something, stack of 50.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with what the Elder Tablet does, it increases power, energy, and mana regen for 10 minutes, and it's a consumable that can drop from whenever you complete a rift or kill invasion mobs or complete zone events. You can get these Elder Tablets, and it was pretty much necessary. And it's not going to be any more. You would have that 24 energy per second regen with a tablet on, so all they really did was take away the need for you to have a tablet. This really results in rogues being exactly where they were before the change, just that now they don't have to spend platinum to be competitive.
Oh, yeah, people aren't really extremely pleased. But before I get into anything with that, I just want to mention that they did remove the energy or the regeneration of mana and energy on it, but there still is a strength and wisdom buff on tablets, so they haven't lost all utility. But as far as energy regeneration is concerned, you know, we were talking that with fervor on or living energy, though actually it's probably a lot less with living energy because you had clarified to me living energy is actually slightly worse than fervor.
Yeah, living energy is 10% and fervor is 13.
People were saying that approximately you have 27 energy per second with fervor on. And like you just said, currently it's 23, with the tablet it's 24, which is what they're increasing it to. So this definitely, basically, it doesn't help starvation of energy whatsoever, as one guy put it. It's basically just making starvation for free. The biggest complaint is that when you're outside a raid setting in a five man, especially if you're doing like a master mode or something, and obviously you don't have this buff, you're extremely gimped. When you're in a raid, you're pretty much okay. I still think maybe there might be a slight buff even after fervor, you could rogues could utilize, but with fervor you're pretty much okay. And the big reason why there's such an argument, or why Tryon really has been resistant to change anything, at least from what me and Matt have surmised, is that if you remove fervor or give this buff by default to a rogue, this buff is almost completely irrelevant to the other three callings, because mana you can manage by yourself. Same thing with rage. So the warrior, the cleric, even the mage, they really have no utility for this buff whatsoever. If you make it so rogue doesn't, this buff is completely and totally obsolete.
Warriors use power, by the way, Joe, not rage.
I use rage. I say rage rather because it is rage. I'm sorry.
It's power.
It's rage.
No, it's power.
It's rage.
How it's no. Rage you build from zero and then expend. Power you have 100% and you use it like energy. It's closer to focus if you're gonna relate it to a WoW resource.
It's rage.
God, you're terrible. I hate you.
I'm just a really, really good troll. It's power. I'm sorry for the misstep there.
I've read a few posts from rogues that are actually saying that even in raids with fervor and a tablet, with their 27 energy per second regen, they're still actually running Oom. And I've actually run into it myself too quite a bit. Although there's been several changes to energy, so I'm not sure if it was the same, because the last time that I raided on my rogue was shortly before Hammernail came out. I think like a few months or a couple months before Hammernail came out. River of Souls was old by that point, and Guild of Prophecy had been out for a little bit, if I remember right. But I ran into this issue too, and it was most prominent for me in my melee specs.
Yeah, I was actually about to say that people have been saying the melee specs in particular probably need even further, more than 27, simply because they just either rely on really costly abilities. And the other thing I've read, which is definitely true, is that spamming AoEs is what kills you. Like if you do trick shot or something, you're doing AoE pulls, even with
Oh yeah, trick shot
27%.
is horrible for energy.
Yeah. But people are saying that it's not fair though, because warriors can do their AoEs, without even a thought in the world. They just spam it regardless, whereas rogues have to like watch their energy, which is plain, isn't fair.
Yep, definitely. And a lot of rogue players have felt like they've been getting the short end of the stick for quite a while now.
Can't imagine why. Sorry, sarcasm took over.
Well, Tryon really seems to be very reluctant, very oddly reluctant to me, from the way I see it, that like they don't want to buff rogue energy, like they're afraid to do it. But they did it two patches in a row, actually, a little while back for the warrior, and now the warrior is pretty much infinite resource. But they don't want to do it for the rogue, which just really kind of sends me for a loop, because I think that warrior's damage is currently tuned significantly higher than a rogue's, to be honest. Rogue has a lot more dependency on a lot more abilities than a warrior does. It's a much more complicated rotation. And so when that rotation gets screwed up while you're running out of energy, I mean, your whole rotation goes to garbage. Especially if you're playing any kind of Blade Dancer spec or Blade Dancer hybrid. The way the Blade Dancer works is it's mostly dependent on more on your builders than on your finishers for your actual damage, and your builders are primarily using Keen Strike, which will then open up the ability to use either Quick or Precision Strike. And then once you use Quick or Precision, you have to use Keen again, so you have to alternate back and forth, back and forth. If you run out of energy, you lose that. Dots start falling off, debuffs start falling off, you can't hit your precision strike, your whole rotation gets thrown out of whack.
I think this all comes back full circle to what I said before, that let's say like instead of fixing warriors two patches ago, they did rogues. I think they would have the same reluctance now with warrior. And it's not necessarily aimed at rogues or warriors, it's because if they change that, then all four callings fervor is completely and utterly useless. So before they figure out, how to change that, they're not going to do anything. And that's why when, what was it, Daglar that announced officially that they're
Yep.
putting up to 24 energy per second, he said, we aren't looking at fervor changes at this time. Not that they never will, because they're probably still internally trying to figure out what they're going to do. I mean, some people have thought of suggestions. One was like give the warrior a buff similar to Living Energy and Fervor. So that way at least three calling Savage. So there's always a chance even in five mans that at least one person in your group has the buff. This is definitely not a long-term one or a very good thing, but at least short-term it does something to, you know, kind of bridge the gap until they find out better solution.
I think a better solution could possibly be, like, I wonder if Trion would accept this. I wonder if the rogue community would accept this. What if they put more emphasis on increasing the damage that you can deal with bleed and damage over time effects, and perhaps increase the duration of those effects so that you're less reliant on your filler abilities, such as like Savage Strike for the Assassin. That would mean that essentially you play kind of similar, if you played World of Warcraft, you play similar to a Feral Druid. Feral Druid energy in World of Warcraft was, it had the same kind of issue that rogues in Rift have. The difference is that a Feral Druid, they were designed mostly around bleed and damage over time effects, and it was possible and it was plenty viable. You wouldn't fall behind. You can ask Joe. I played a Feral Druid for a while in our raids, and I was up in the top 2 DPS, top 3 DPS every time. So I was very competitive with it because I learned how to pool my energy, you know, so I would put up my 3 main bleeds and then I would be out of energy and I would pool my energy. I'd get up to like 40, use 20 for a filler in between if I don't have to refresh yet, and then let it come back up to 40 or 50 or 60 or whatever I needed to quickly refresh all my bleeds again. And I wonder if the rogue community and if Trion would accept that as an alternative.
I don't think it's a bad idea at all. The only problem I see with this is like some people just don't want to have that playstyle. They, you know, they flat out want to play how the rogue is currently designed. So it's only a little hurdle, like, especially if you know, there's multiple melee specs, so you can't make them all play very extremely similar. I mean, that's the whole point. You play different melee specs, the playstyle is completely different. So no one's going to want to play 4 different specs, and they all play, you know, extremely similar. So I could see this working for, like, one role, basically, like, whether it be, like, Assassin or Nightblade, whatever, or Blade Dancer, whatever the case might be. But I think that this isn't something that's going to fix any and all problems. They're still going to have to figure something else.
Well, let's look at this for a second, because last episode we talked a little bit about, you know, making all of the best builds be 51-point builds just for the sake of easy balancing, right? And we were talking about how right now we're looking at kind of the hybrid specs, like 38-28s. That's one class, you know what I mean? We don't view the classes as the individual soul, but rather as the most viable combination of the available souls. And that's the class. Like Bloodstalker, for example, would be like the class, the most popular, you know, or the best rogue class right now. It wouldn't be referred to as Assassin. But let's look at the individual souls for a moment. If you look at Assassin is already extremely bleed oriented. They've got, let's see, the Jagged Strike, Impale. I think Jagged Strike is out of stealth, but they could make a change to that too to help the bleed orientation of the Assassin. So they have Jagged Strike, at least as an opener. They have Impale, they have Puncture, they have Exposed Weakness, which sort of works like a dot. It enhances the damage dealt by bleeds, but it counts as its own damage source. Every time they crit, they put up a bleed. So they have at least 3 to keep up. So that would already fit very well into this sort of new model for the Rogue. The Nightblade uses, I'm trying to remember, it's there's Dusk to Dawn, which doesn't have a 100% dot uptime, but the buff that it gives you does, so they could retweak the Dusk to Dawn, and they have Fiery Spike. And if you're playing a Nightblade, then you're most likely also an Assassin, which means that you have Puncture and you have the bleed every time you crit. That would fit fairly well. The only one that I see not really fitting fairly well into a more bleed-oriented melee rogue would be the Blade Dancer. But the Blade Dancer has several abilities that enhance the rogue's energy management. Problem is that the energy cost of the rotation is, even with, you know, the help that those talents give you, is still very high. So they could tweak the Blade Dancer individually at the very high numbers, such as anything that's above 38 points spent in Blade Dancer. You know, that's where they could put all the energy buffs in that, so that Blade Dancer is, you know, remains as the sort of, you know, nuke spec that's not relying on bleeds, but will, if you go deep enough into it, if you have to spend enough into it, it would actually, you know, it would be efficient enough to sustain the burst damage.
I don't know why they can't. I mean, I'm not opposed to any of the changes you said, really, I'm not. But why can't they just simply go into Bard and Chloromancer and change what Living Energy and Fervor do? Make them do the same thing again. Instead of doing energy regeneration, I don't know, They both increase damage of the raid statically by 3%. Problem solved. And then they bump rogue energy up to 27 per second. I just solved everything.
It's definitely a possibility. It's definitely something that they would have to look at, because if they are considering changes to rogue energy or additional buffs to rogue energy regen, then obviously Fervor, and commonly referred to as Clover, the living energy buff from Chloramancer, would become pretty useless. If that, or it would make it so that warriors and rogues don't ever have to worry about their resource. You might as well at that point just remove the resource entirely.
You still manage, you don't really manage mana. I don't know. I wouldn't want to completely remove a resource. That'd be kind of weird to look at.
Mana is completely, well, I'm saying that they would, that you might as well remove the resource. If it was that infinite because of the fervor buff, you know, if you buff rogues so their base energy regen is 27 per second, and then they get fervor, and now they're at 30-31 energy regen per
second.
Oh,
yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Then it's an infinite resource. You might as well just remove it at that point. So they're going to have to rework fervor.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I agree with that, too. I don't think... See, I think that's what it is. They're not going to keep fervor. They're just trying to figure out what they're going to do with fervor and living energy if they indeed bump up rogue energy regen. What I understand, though, is, like, I understand they did one energy per second increase, because that's basically what the tablet gave. But why don't they do some kind of middle ground? Like, give us 25, give us 26.
Because they're afraid that's going to be too much. And they removed energy regen from the Elder Tablet, probably because they think anything above 27 is too much. But, I mean, I don't know. That's, you know, our intro. It's not the game we made. It's the game we play. Well, how many of you guys, you devs, are playing rogues? Because, you know, I see it. I'm with the rogue community on this. Rogue energy is in a slump. It's not fun when you're doing a complicated rotation. Not that all the rotations, but there are some complicated rotations for rogues. But it's not fun when you're trying to pay attention to boss mechanics, trying to pay attention to your rotation, and then you run out of energy and you're constantly just, you know, waiting to do your next move. It's not fun playstyle. So
yeah, it kills the fluidity of the spec.
Yeah, if you can't do the rotation that you designed your character to do simply because there's a roadblock from energy, that's an obvious issue. So I don't know, maybe they're not playing rogues enough. This is a good change because it's gonna take away the cost of playing a melee rogue, but it's not going to fix their energy regen at all.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's sometimes I feel like Tryon overthinks it. Like, if you honestly gave Fervor and Living Energy a very simple buff, like it just said, 3% passive damage, you just, like, you know what I mean? Like, what's that going to harm the game?
And you just... I don't think they're overthinking it. I think that they're just, it's, I would rather them think this way, okay? I would rather them do what they're doing, honestly. I'm going to get, like, backstabbed by some rogue or, like, assassinated. I would prefer them to do what they're doing and take it slow and go up in slow increments, because there's too many issues with MMORPGs. It's happened in Rift a few times. Actually, it happens in Rift all the time. Let's just look at Warrior Rift Storm right now. But it's happened to other games as well, where they overbuff something and then they have to nerf it. And then everybody cries nerf, and there's just a whole mess about it. So right now, you're making people happy with small changes, small increments. Just take it step by step and go up slowly. I'm okay with that. What would be nice is if they could at least acknowledge that rogue energy is, there's an issue with it.
I was literally about to say that, because I think that's what bothers people more than anything, is that even up until this point where, you know, they were like, okay, we're buffing the 24, you know, there was no acknowledgement. So for a long while, people were mad, and they just came out and said, oh, it's being bumped up one energy per second. But then they didn't say there was any further issues to be addressed. If they should have came out and said, you know, we're internally testing and seeing the best, you know, route to go with this change, people would be like, okay, cool. You know, give us feedback on upcoming, you know, developments. But that's cool.
Yeah, saying that we're not looking at fervor at this time is kind of telling me that at this time, we don't see rogues as having a problem with energy. Let's talk about player housing a bit, because I've seen some threads. There have been threads on player housing coming up all over the course of Rift's life, every here and there. But most recently, I've seen at least three threads pop up on the forums about this. And you and me talk about this all the time, because you're such a fan of the Star Wars Galaxies days, and they had housing back then, right? And a lot of open land and stuff to build player cities in. This is an inevitable feature, I think.
I think it's in general just based on player demand, but I'm always skeptical of a more theme park type world implementing housing simply because I don't know where they're going to put it. And if they put it like in a designated area, like this is where all the housing goes, that feels so contrived. and like not natural. That was the whole point that drew you to. Not necessarily Dark Age Camelot had it, EverQuest had it. You put it in the middle of the world and it felt like realistic, like you were actually, immersing your character. Being like, oh, like WoW, I remember WoW for a while. They always talked about they were gonna like add an island that was instant, so you put a house there. I was like, that is so useless and dumb and completely defeats the purpose of having a house.
Well, we've talked about this off air a bit too, the whole housing thing, and it actually comes up between me and Joe a lot. And I think Rift is the pr yes, Rift is theme parky, and I say theme parky or theme park-ish because at its core, Rift is a theme park. But I think that it has so many open world elements to it with the epic questing taking you all over the world to do all different tasks. Zone events and or not zone events, Rift events can happen with participation in Droughtlands, even if you're 50, or sometimes you have to go to Silverwood and do stuff. So they've really put a lot of focus on the open world, and they've put enough of it on open world content that I think that housing would fit really well in this game. I think that the current direction for MMORPGs as a genre is going to it has become very theme park related, or completely theme park, and I think it's gonna honestly, I think it's gonna stay that way. I think that MMOs are gonna move more towards, like we were talking about early in the episode, a sort of all-in-one experience where you can get that kind of sandboxy feel where there's exploration and there's housing and there's role playing and weddings, and then there's also your instance dungeons, your raiding, your PvP and arena, your lakes, all that stuff. I mean, that would be the miracle game, to actually implement all of that stuff right.
I had talked to you for months, probably, a long course of time, that the biggest problem is that when sandbox games come out, the world is always so good. There's, cool side activities, but they always lack an end game. They have side activities, but they never actually have like main activities to do. And the first game that comes out with a sandbox type world, a sandbox attitude, but adds theme park type end game, assuming it's well, good and polished, will conquer all, period. Because
And I think that's going to be Rift. I think that's going to be Rift because we talked about Plaintouched Wilds last episode, right? What's to say that we're not going to see Plaintouched Wilds? Probably, if we're going to see it in an upcoming patch or a patch this year for that matter, I think it's going to be, or very well could be, 1.10. We'll see Crucia and we'll see the Plaintouched Wilds in the same patch, and it this whole city zone thing that we're seeing, and everybody knows Crucia is going to be the next dragon, right? It's going to be the plane of air, so it would make sense that the city zone was in the air. And what if the city zone was above the Plaintouched Wilds, and the Plaintouched Wilds itself was just like open land where you could do player housing and player cities? You could make it a massive zone, so that the whole thing is dedicated to players, but then rifts and invasions and zone events all still happen where your houses are, so you have to defend your villages and cities.
Well, for one, it would depend how massive the zone is. And number two, like, I don't know, I can't say straight up like what would happen because I'd have to actually experience in the game if this actually went in. But just the concept of like everyone having their house in one area kind of like turns me off, honestly. That was what was so good about previous games, was that you could put your house anywhere in the entire world, so that like, it felt like it completely unimmerses you when you're all in one area, because it's like, the whole point of getting immersed is it feels like realistic, it feels plausible. Imagine there's real life and everyone in the world, literally every single person in the world, lived in New York. That's not plausible. That's retarded. So that's why I feel it's stupid. That's just how I feel about it. Like, and the Rift and invasion idea, like, I think that'd be cool, but the only problem is like that would become an annoyance after a while. Like, I can imagine like us like getting ready for a rain and be like, oh crap, my house is on fire. Like, that would become an annoyance after a while. Like, sure, if it happened like every once in a while, not too bad. But what happens if it happened when I was offline? My house just gets torn down. Like, I don't know. There's a that would be have to be a really hard thing to implement, quite frankly.
There are several fail safes that I think you could put in place for it, such as, your guild, because it, along with player housing also comes the thoughts about guild halls. So perhaps the guild, as a guild, could buy an area of land, purchase an area of land.
Yeah, player cities.
Yeah, like a player city, but it'd be like a guild city, right? And then you don't have to be online to defend your house, because your guild might be online to defend your house. Or, I mean, you could do a fail safe, like if you're not actually in your house, then your house can't be hurt. I don't know.
See, this is how it worked in S3G, but it wasn't because mobs were attacking your house. Players were attacking your house, so the opposite faction. That's what was so fun about S3G. It was depending on your faction. You know, if I was Imperial, you could put up... I forgot how you got the points, but it was basically, like, reputation for your faction, which you got for doing, like, you know, your faction's quest. You could buy, like, turrets and stuff, and buy an AT-ST and stuff to literally patrol. You could buy... a little small NPC troops to patrol, but, you know, as good as they were, they still weren't comparable to, like, actual players, obviously. And once a flagged player, like, crossed over, if they were the opposite faction, they would get flagged. If they weren't flagged, I should say, their opposite faction, they'd get flagged immediately once they were in the radius, and you could attack them. That was insanely fun, and that's why World PvP in that game was, like, unparalleled to, like, anything I ever played. But the risk thing, like I say, yeah, they definitely could put in fail safes, but even with all that in, biggest problem I see with Rift is the sheer size of the world. The biggest thing that sandbox games have over theme park is that the size of the world is, like, so massive you can't even fathom it. Like, because you'll have a zone, for example, and the zone will be for, I don't know, level 5 to 8. And maybe 30% of that zone is actually utilized for questing and whatnot. The rest of the zone is just free open space. It might have mobs in it, but it's not like, but there's certain areas that don't have mobs at all. Whereas theme park type games, it's just like wave and wave and wave and wave of mobs over and over and over and over again. So, like, the initial design of the world is what, like, tells me, I don't know if they could put housing. And if they put in housing, it wouldn't be the same as games like EverQuest, Dark Age of Camelot, S3G, etc. Like I said, it depends how they put it in and how well it's executed. I could be sitting here 6 months from now and saying how spectacular housing is. I just have a lot of skepticism at this point.
Well, you know, if all the housing is in, say, Plain Touched Wilds, right? If all the housing is in one massive zone, okay? And you're concerned about being able to defend your cities and defend your houses against rips and invasions happening in that zone, let's look at Ember Isle. Ember Isle has turrets and healing nodes and wells and all this kind of stuff that you can upgrade to defend against the onslaughts on the Ember Isle. You use your planar charges to upgrade these turrets. So they could advance on that because that's already an awesome system that we saw. It's not horribly new, you know what I mean, but it's new to Rift, and people really like that. Like, I really like that. I don't think that there's been a lot of emphasis on onslaughts since, like, the initial, you know, holy shit, Ember Isle is friggin' awesome, you know, since that happened. But it's a great base that they could very easily build on, implement in the new zone with the player housing so that you can get more powerful turrets, get more turrets and types of natural defenses that will defend your player or city zone, sorry, or your player city or your housing while you're offline or while you're in a raid. And to keep it fun so that it doesn't become, you know, completely trivial because you can just let the zone defend itself, you could simply make it so that the turrets and the defenses will scale with how many people from the guild that owns them or the player that owns them, whatever. Just make them scale down. So if there's a ton of players in the zone, you still have your turrets helping you out, but they scale down. If there's, like, nobody in there, then the turrets can pretty much fend them off on their own.
You know, that would work perfectly fine. Like I said, and like how you said it too, you know, it really just depends how it's executed, how it's implemented. I still have some doubts. I don't know exactly how it's going to work, but...
What's the big deal about being able to put your house anywhere anyways? I mean, aside from the logistics of just having enough space for the houses in a single zone, what does it matter if you can put a house in Moonshee Highlands? Like, what would be the point to just... you know, throw, you're a level
because
50 and you just throw
it,
a house in the middle of the zone somewhere randomly?
I can put it anywhere in the zone, so if I like an area, this is where I go. That's the half of, like, and I'm not even a big role player, but I immensely enjoyed doing that because it made you feel like, you know, you were your character, and if you were your character, you wouldn't be just like, oh, I'm going to move into Plain Touched Wilds because everyone has their house there. You're going to be like, I'm going to put my house wherever the hell I want it to be because, you know, it's my house. And it immerses you in your character, and like you said, the logistics of the space definitely plays a big role. It's not so much the you know, being able to place it anywhere, but that definitely plays a role. But I think the logistics more than anything is what you know.
Well, what if they created multiple zones that kind of had similar styles, similar to some of the current zones or brand new styles, whatever, that you could choose from? Because you're talking about the aesthetics of a zone, right? Like lighting, and is there a lava terrain or is it rocky?
That played a part, and just the sheer fact that, like, having the power to literally be like, hey, I can put it anywhere I want. It was actually fun in S3G, at least. It was so cool. Like, if you looted, like, rare stuff, you could put it on your wall, and it was, like, awesome to think, you know, if you're playing for a year or 2 years or 3 years, like think about, like, I still have this rare artifact from like launch or something that no one has, you know, seen since. I remember having a gun that like they literally deleted from the game because it was so overpowered, hanging on my wall at one point, like 6 months after launch.
That's cool.
And people literally like came into my house and were like, whoa, what's that? And it looked ridiculous. And I'm like, that's the gun they got rid of from the game, but it, you know, they kept all the previous ones in the game, and it was just hanging on my wall. And they actually had an entire profession that was literally interior design. So I literally sat there for like 3 hours putting couches against my wall and like designing my house. It was hilarious. But you have to realize though that games like that, even if they had big time end game, which SWG definitely had a lot of PvP, but PvE was, you know, there was some PvE, but there was no like focused raids or anything. A huge aspect of those games was socialization, which really is almost dead in MMOs nowadays. And that was the big draw to housing, was that you could like go in someone's house. Like I remember having like 10 people in my house, and we literally were sitting down just talking for like long, long periods of time. And I think that's completely lost on this market nowadays.
So we're going to wrap this up, but I think I would really enjoy housing. I would especially love to complete a progression raid and then take the head of Greenscale and put it on my wall, or the head of of Maleforge or Lathys and put it on my wall. That would be awesome. Hell, God, if you kill Lathys, right, and you can take her home to your house, you'd be rich. You'd have all the money you ever need to design your home. You know what else I would put on my wall? You know what would be in my house?
Troll hair?
Well, not troll hair, but I was going to say a collection of trolls, yes. And by that I mean I would take the heads of all the best trolls on the server and I will put them on my wall. Troll my general chat, I dare you. And that's all the time we have this week. Don't forget about the upcoming Twitch channel. We are looking for players interested in streaming all sorts of content such as raids and PvP. If you're interested, just send us an email or contact us on Twitch or on the forums with what you'd like to stream, your PC specs, connection speed, and your preferred schedule. Those interested should be willing to stream for at least 1 hour and be comfortable speaking to a wide audience. Also, we're always looking for guests to come on the show and be a part of Community Voice. So if you have any area of Rift that you're especially passionate about or have extensive experience in, be sure to contact us by email at riftovercast@gmail.com, on Twitter at riftovercast, or on Facebook at facebook.com/riftovercast. You can find Overcast on Stitcher Radio. Just visit Stitcher.com, search Rift Overcast, and add us to your favorites. You can subscribe to Overcast on iTunes using the link on our blog at riftovercast.blogspot.com. Also subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/riftovercast, and our live stream on Twitch TV at twitch.tv/riftovercast. As always, we want to hear your opinions on both the show and the game, so be sure to leave us a comment below, and we will see you next week.